Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Today I have got Frances Scadden with me. Now, Frances is a midlife empowerment coach who helps women who are feeling lost and unfulfilled to living boldly. I love that word, Frances. And purposely. I think that happens a little bit when people lose their purpose, and we're going to talk about that. So purposely in their careers and relationships and health. After a successful corporate career in learning and development and change management, she now uses her extensive expertise to guide women to breaking free of the societal shoulds. That's probably the nastiest word in the English language. Rediscovering their true identity and cultivating unshakable self-confidence, proving that midlife is the perfect time to redefine what's possible. Welcome, Frances. I love that intro. It definitely connects with everything that I do.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we've had some previous conversations and we've touched base a couple of times, and I just think, yeah, it aligns perfectly, but I love that you picked up on that word bold, and that really resonated for you.
It certainly does. And we just chatted just before we came on. I just had a week down the beach, and when this goes live, I'll actually be traveling around Australia for a few weeks down into New South Wales and doing a whole lot of festivals and things. And I travel with some friends who don't necessarily, who are in that sort of midlife area, and they're now living the life that they have chosen to do. You know, they get in the caravan and do a bit of traveling without being yet necessarily a grey nomad.
Yes.
But doing it in a way that they can just say, yeah, that's me, that's what I'm doing, and that's that where that boldly part.
Absolutely. I think sometimes we hear the word bold and we think it has to be this really loud, over the top, extreme action. And bold, I mean, it's like everything, right? It's an individual perception, but bold can sometimes really mean just using your voice to say what you need to say, what's within you that you potentially wouldn't have said in your 30s because fear of judgment. Now we're getting to a stage where, yeah, bold might mean just using that voice and speaking with purpose and intention.
There's a lot of things that we fear with doing that in our 30s and that sense of judgment. But I've noticed as I've got older, the filter's still on most of the time, but I'm quite comfortable sharing and talking about my ideas and beliefs. And I don't, you know, not everyone has to agree with them, but I'm comfortable sharing them. And
And I think that's a really great distinction. I think what happens is we do still have this potential to not speak out or not speak up. Not necessarily speak out, but I because of the fear of judgment or what could be the consequences here. But that's really an awareness, right? And we use that. It might pause, it might stop us for a moment, and then we can make a decision: is it still right for me, and am I okay, knowing that there might be a consequence or there might be a little bit of judgment, and am I okay with that? And when we stop and think about it, it's probably I really am. This is important to say. And so then we say it. But I feel like the difference. When I was in my 30s, it was more just don't say it, you know. Whereas now it's, will I or won't I? Yeah, I will. And I think that's the difference.
It is. It's, although I'm just thinking about a particular point, because I've been known to have a voice and know to speak out. And look, that's what I encourage people to do as well, and teaching them how to do it well as a speaker. But I think now what I do better is I said the filter, but the filter isn't to stop me saying what I want to say, but the filter is more of how I'm going to present that message or story, where it was probably a lot more direct when I didn't understand that.
I can relate to that. I'm also, as much as I have had fear of judgment and have felt shushed at times, I also have been known, and my friends would laugh at that, but I've also been known as somebody who would speak what needs to be said. And I think the perfect description there of what you're talking about is there's more intention now. When you pause and you think about it, you're thinking about what is the message I really want to relay here. And again, am I okay with whatever consequence might come with that? So it's more, what's the message? What's the impact? What's my intention? What do I want to get from it? And what do I want my audience to get from that? And I think for anyone public speaking, or doing any sort of speaking role, that's really important, right? Because there's a purpose as to why you're speaking. You're wanting to create either an emotion or a feeling or an experience, and you want your listeners to be able to take away a message, an outcome, a point. And so learn and grow from that. So I think it's, it's the intention that's behind it.
Yes, I like that. That's a good way to define that. What, I mean, other than being in your demographic yourself, what got you into doing this, coming out of corporate and going, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah. Look, when you reflect back, you could easily, or, I could definitely easily say, I think I've always known this is where I was going to land. But, we've got to ride the waves of trying things and doing things that we thought were right. It's those shoulds. That wasn't necessarily right for me. To make it a short story,
we got an hour. It's all good.
Yeah. I wanted to, I suppose what happened was I found myself a single mum at 21. And that wasn't just a matter of, I took some action there for that to happen as well. But I was a single mum at 21. I was very much, right, how can I make sure this life means something? How can I make sure I show my children that you can be something if you want to be something? So I was a little bit late. I went to TAFE and university as a mature age student, even though I was only in my 20s.
And we did things much younger in those days.
I looked
at the wedding photo the other day and I go, such a baby, 20-year-old. Yeah. He would have been younger than that.
And I was still past mature age.
It's unheard of now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is a really good example of how I've always done things a little bit differently. So I went to university. I went to TAFE first, got a diploma, went into university a little bit later, got my degree in business and human resource management. And I had been working in retail at the time and thought, right, I am going to go into the big businesses now and I'm going to change the world. No more will there be this pushy sales. No more will there be this bullying, these, not so nice tactics of performance reviews in the food courts of shopping centres and things like that. So I had big dreams. Not realistic expectations, but big dreams. So it's funny, as soon as I finished my degree and went into corporate, I actually didn't end up back in retail at all. But I did end up in industrial relations and finance industries and those sorts of things. And Along the way, I would love the work that I was doing and really believed I had an impact. And yet then corporate politics and the restrictions that come in play, because policies and procedures and levels of management and all of those things. And I always felt like I was being shushed and held back, and it just really went against my values. I didn't realize that for a very long time, though. I kept thinking there was something wrong with me, so I would go and find another role until my 40s, when I realized, yes, I've got a part to play in this, but I'm not actually broken. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm just not doing what I was meant to be doing. So I took a bit of time to work out what that actually was and what parts of my corporate jobs I really did enjoy and was good at. And then COVID came along and it gave me some time to reflect when we were shut down and locked down and working from home. And that was when I knew that it was time to start the coaching business that I had always thought of. I was coaching in corporate anyway. Mm-hmm. It just made sense to take those skills and go back to almost the root cause. What is going on for women specifically? Stick with the demographic that I have a better understanding of, and what's going on for them in the workplace, but what's going on outside that's impacting at the workplace, and those sorts of things. So that's how I got into coaching.
Yeah, excellent. And I find that most of the coaches that I speak to have had the lived experience and then realize that they're not alone in that, acquire the skills, and then go and help more people, as many people as they can.
Well, it's that understanding, isn't it? It's that empathy, level of understanding, having been through it, and then what people like myself tend to do is we test and learn on ourselves. We practice on ourselves. We try this. Did it work? Didn't it work? What could have been done better? Oh, I've learned that along the way, and I've read some books and I've spoken with some great coaches for myself. How can I use all of that and the knowledge and skills and experience I already have? And I know whenever I've hired a coach, I really want them to know what I'm going through. I just need them to be a little bit further along in that journey to help then guide me along. And so that's what I do for people.
Absolutely. What I've found, because, you know, I've been doing this for quite a few years now, and what I found is when I get a coach, it's the what I need to progress at that time. And then I get a coach with more skills and you end up paying more for them. But that's what happens to get to the level that you want to get to and, you know, have the success
absolutely
in business and life that you want.
And we do that in all areas of our life. So when we hire a PT initially, it might be a PT to get us moving because we've never moved. In that sort of way. So to make sure our form is correct, to make sure we're not going to injure ourselves, to teach us the basics. As we progress and our bodies progress, then we hire more of a coach who can then make sure our lives and our movement can work together. And it's the same with career coaches, and it's the same with leaders in the corporate space. You know, you really are always looking for someone who can take you to the next step once you've reached that outcome.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just writing down some things as you go of how our earlier careers mirrored each other. And I went back and got a diploma after having children. That was one of the first things I did as professional development was I learned to type, because I'd done all academic subjects at school and left at 15 and went into retail. And then, you know, once I moved into a different position and realized I needed to learn how to type, it's probably one of the most useful things that I've ever done in any sort of coaching and training. But you're constantly looking for what you need. And then the diploma, and then actually, I went back and did senior English, and when I studied it as a mature adult, when I was studying it, the teacher said, look around the room to left and right, because those people will not be here at the end of the course. We started at 24 and finished with about 8 people. So it's that commitment to things as well, which is really important.
And absolutely. Then, and that carries through in so many areas, yes. Doesn't it? Yeah.
With a diploma, it was in business management. And then moved into, you know, along the way, taught aerobics for 10 years and then sales rep, and then stepped into a senior management role for a very large privately owned family business. And
amazing.
And then set up my business on the side and been doing that as well. But
I think we've got a very similar story, Janine, to a lot of women, especially in this era or chapter. When I think about the jobs that were available when I was in high school, it was retail,
teaching,
admin,
nursing.
Teaching, admin. Nursing.
Mm-hmm.
So you were either going to be a teacher, you were going to be a nurse, you were going to work in retail and be a shop assistant, because that's what they were known as then, or you were going to be a secretary.
Mm.
I don't even think the term secretary is even used anymore. that was kind of your career path. Oh, and then of course motherhood, which was not as a career, but that was your next path. And I, you know, I remember being asked, you know, always the conversation, what are you going to be? What do you want to be when you leave school? I didn't really like any of those options. I did consider being a teacher. That made sense to me. And I always knew I was going to be.
That was my other thing. I was going back, get to be a teacher.
Yeah.
Going back to year 11 to study teaching, as all my friends did. And but I, you know, that $37 a week I received for my first job, there's no way I was going back.
Yeah. When I went to uni the first time, I went to go into, I did teaching. And I did it for 6 months and went, wow, well, I'm studying to do this while I've got two young children at home and I'm exhausted and I can't see how this is going to be worth it.
We're both teaching.
We are both teaching.
Mm.
And that's what I mean. I think I've always known for a long time I would land here. I was the introverted person who would never, ever do public speaking. I struggled to stand up in front of the class at university and present because, you know, it was always group assignments and you always had to do a presentation. And I was taking, you know, the anti-anxiety drops before I would go into class before a presentation. My very first job out of university was going around Australia talking to people about industrial relation laws. So I was talking to people, 50 plus people. I soon learned how to get over it. but yeah, here I am teaching, just in a different way. It's interesting,
it's
isn't
amazing.
It? But I think our stories are not too dissimilar from a lot of women.
No, and I think that's such an important thing for women who are listening, that they can relate to you're not just there by yourself. You know, there's other people that have gone on a very similar journey as you. And it depends on how much, look, I'm big on this, how much you invest in yourself, whether you invest in yourself by eating healthily, whether you invest in yourself by sleeping well, whether you invest in yourself by getting good coaches, what it is, but the priority has to be yourself. You have to be number one in your life. And I will not apologize ever for saying that.
No.
Because the more you have, the more you can help someone else.
I really, you know, what happens to us when we don't put ourselves first or as a priority?
Mm.
Some women I know get really uncomfortable with the first thing. So we'll start with being a priority.
Mm-hmm.
When we don't have ourselves as a priority, unfortunately, what I've seen is nobody else generally puts you as a priority either, in my experience.
Right. Yeah.
The second thing is we end up at a point where we are in crisis mode, and we're seeing a lot of this, unfortunately, at the moment, because women, then you don't know who you are anymore. You really feel completely lost. Sometimes when I'm speaking to women, and, you know, I really like to get a great understanding of who they are and what they like to do, and You know, are they outdoors people? Are they indoors people? What, how would they spend their perfect day if they could? And they're just blank. They almost, and then the tears come forward because they're ashamed that they can't answer that question. And we shouldn't ever have to feel that way. Not ever.
And I've mentioned this on some other podcasts, so some regular listeners will know it. But I presented at it was a leaders summit, and I was running a side workshop, you know, they breakout. And I got there at lunchtime and I'm listening to all of these women over lunch and just having conversations, and they're directors of hospitals and senior leaders in government. They were all very, very clever women with incredible jobs. And when I was listening to them, it changed then how I delivered the workshop, because one of the first questions I asked was, is what do you do for yourself? And it was crickets. There was only one person in the group of 20 who was able to answer that.
Yeah.
And it was just so...
It's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. I was going to say sad. It's definitely heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. We're raising humans. We're mentoring as parents, as aunties, as, you know, just women in the world. We're mentoring future generations. We're smart enough that we can run our own companies, build our own companies. We can run other people's companies. We can run households. We can do all of these amazing things. But we can't, or we believe we can't, put ourselves top of the list and do things for ourselves. Now, we have an endless amount of opportunities in the world that we live in right now to do something for ourselves. So if it's not get yourself a coach, there are podcasts, obviously like this one. There are books. There are blogs. There are so many learning opportunities. And we're always learning. That is really the purpose of life, to learn, have fun, come up against some bumps, see how resilient we are, keep on going. I mean, is there really any other purpose? Mm-hmm. And then, so we've got access to all of these things. We've got the opportunity to just sit in a beautiful guided meditation. You can get those for free. There are apps that specialize in them. We can journal and write. And some amazing women end up turning that into books. Self-authored books. There's just so many opportunities to do something for yourself, and it never has to be meaning that you cannot look after other people as well.
Yeah, but that should word gets in the way, Frances.
It's the should word, isn't it? Yeah, the should syndrome.
Mm-hmm. I say people should allow themselves.
I love it when somebody says that. This is actually one of the things that I talk about, the should syndrome. So the endless list of roles and obligations and expectations that society places on women, and that we also place on ourselves, you know, being the perfect caregiver, the perfect partner, the perfect employee, the perfect professional. And these expectations leave us feeling pressured to prioritize everybody else. They drain our energy, and we wonder why we're so exhausted all the time. And they leave us absolutely no time to explore who we are and enjoy the fact that we've got a body that can do things, a beautiful world and environment that we can do things in. And it's taking all of that away. It's taking away joy.
Yeah, because, you know, because if we don't do, if we don't look after other people and put everyone else first, well, then the guilt comes with that. I was reading one of Brené Brown's book, Daring Greatly, the other day, and she was talking about shame. It's about shame and vulnerability. And her comment about women, the way women most shamed, I suppose, is the best way to term it, that is in either the way they look, their appearance, or the way they parent. That's where they feel the most shame. And so that's when the guilt comes in and everything else with that, because they're quite vulnerable. They are quite vulnerable in those particular fields. And, you know, if you're a stay-at-home mum, well, how come you're a stay-at-home mum? You're not contributing. If you're a working mum, how come you're working? You're not staying home. Whatever it is, there's always going to be someone out there challenging you. And that's when I was reading that particular point, I'm thinking, it's coming in from all angles. So we have to own it ourselves and what we choose to do and eliminate that guilt. And I know you talk about that inner critic, and that's where that guilt comes from, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. There are always going to be people that will judge. There are always, we're dealing with, saying this to somebody else the other day, we are dealing with generational beliefs and expectations. Now, we could say, oh, you know, this has come from our mum, or it's come from my mum's mum, or, and all of that, in some way, there is some truth to that. The generation, the judgment and the expectations, they go back so far that we wouldn't even be able to place which generation they started in. So we already have that. Then we have this inner critic, this persistent voice that tells us we're being selfish, shouldn't want more, you're not good enough, you shouldn't be pursuing any change. And it stops us from setting boundaries. It stops us from embracing opportunities. It stops us from asking for more and believing that we deserve better. So we really are getting it from, and, you know, again, no, not arguing, things have changed. We're starting to hear more about these things now. The influences have changed. Again, when I was at high school, it was Dolly magazine, and now it's, you know, it's TikTok and it's everywhere, actually. These influences and these expectations, they're heavy, and we almost can't get it right. So at some point we need to ask ourselves, who am I going to listen to most, myself or everybody else? And we have to then say, okay, if it's going to be myself, then let's start retraining this inner critic. Let's start showing her that she actually can start to give positive feedback just as much as being an inner critic.
I love that, retraining that inner critic. You know, one of the things that I suggest to people is they give that inner critic a funny voice.
Oh, yes.
So I go like a Donald Duck type of voice or something, or a little tiny Mickey Mouse voice. Every time that inner critic is judging, and then to review it and replay it in that little tiny voice or however you do it. And
it loses its power then, doesn't it?
It does lose its power.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes you start to be alert to it as well.
And this is the most important thing. If we can start to be aware, but that is the very first step. But we also have to admit that that is just the first step. It doesn't stop there. So we can listen to the podcasts and we can listen to all the conversation that everybody is having now about changing the way we believe we have to look, and that we don't have to be perfect with our lipstick and our high heels and our beautiful figures and all of those sorts of things all of the time. But we also have to choose to take action. We ourselves have to choose to take action. Otherwise, we're not really taking our own power back, and the inner critic will always have more power over us. So until we can do things like even just giving it a funny voice, that's taking action. And the action does create momentum. So the more we do that, the more we retrain that voice, and the smaller that voice gets.
And learning how to set boundaries is one of the biggest things, isn't it? And we had this little discussion before we came on about that I'll be traveling next year and I am on so many committees and put my hand up for things. But 99% of the time, it's things that that's fine. I've got that covered. It's stuff I really enjoy doing. Got one thing at the moment that I'm tossing up with. But I'm traveling next year, so I'm already making people aware. I'm not going to be here to do it. Somebody else needs to put their hand up for it. That's the boundary. That's learning how to say no.
Learning how to say no. But this is where the getting to know yourself is important, because you want to make sure you're only saying no to the things that you shouldn't or don't want to do.
Yes.
You still want to be able to say yes to the things that you really do want to do and how you want to spend your time. And you're only going to know that when you know yourself.
And that's a great point. Yes. Yeah. Because we do want to say yes. Yeah. I have a saying that I am very organized so I can be flexible. So if someone says, do you want to come for lunch? I'll go, yeah, sure, I can do that. Because
I used to avoid structure like the plague until I realized having structure in certain areas of my life allows me to, on a Friday, say, it's Francis Day. I'll do whatever it is I want to do today. But right. It's only because I have structure in the rest of my life that I can do that. So it's not about having all or nothing. But again, you need to know what's really important to you to be able to do that.
Correct. And just even prioritizing some time. I know when I've worked with some people trying to get their calendars working for them and not working against them, they couldn't take time off. And so just even once a month took a long weekend. That was it. That's all they had to do. It was already in their diary. It was already organized, and they don't work, and they make sure that they find things that they enjoy doing. Yeah,
and so going back to boundaries, you sort of, it's interesting. We always think setting boundaries is the hardest. What I have found is sticking to the boundaries is the hardest.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah. We can decide once we start to know, what these things that we're going to say yes to are and the things we're going to say no, we can then decide what our boundaries are going to be. But of course, boundaries working relies on quite a few things. It relies on us sticking to them. And we also have to remember that usually a boundary means we're saying no to something and probably someone. So it involves other people. And whenever we're involving other people, you're bringing other challenges in, aren't you? So
you certainly are. I remember a story. I was running a school fete when my children were younger. And I asked this lady that I'd met through school to help run at one of the stalls. And she said, I truly appreciate that you think that I can do that. It's a real honor to be able to. I'm going to have to say no at this time because I'm heavily committed. But thank you so much for honoring me with that question. I walked away and gone, she said no. It was beautifully done.
Did it in the most respectful way to herself and to you.
Absolutely. It was just, oh, wow, okay. That's how you do it. It's absolutely possible. And, the thing I see with us women is that it's like we've got, and I'll put my hand up for this as well, something to prove. I can do everything. I can take over and I'm not going to ask for help. I'm way better at that now, and I don't have to have my house spotless and things that other people that I know do, like fold their husband's pajamas. The things that I just go, you got to be kidding. But that's their choice. Again, that's their choice to do that. It's not mine. It's that I have to be capable of doing everything. Yeah. It's such a female thing, isn't it? I think.
Well, it's interesting. I think
I have sons, and that's the same thing on that side.
Yeah, I was just thinking, thinking about my husband as well, and I actually think both genders really struggle with it, or both sides, really struggle with this. And I don't know if this is a gender issue or, again, it's a societal issue. It's somewhere along the lines there's been this training, this belief, these stories that we must be strong all of the time. And that is why even now when, again, I ask women about how they feel about something, they ignore the feel and they tell me what they do. I'm not asking what you do. I'm asking how you feel. They're too scared to kind of have a look at that. And this whole, you know, must do everything on their own, I call that the lone warrior trap, because what happens is, and it, when new mums have babies, they fall straight into this. I must be able to do everything on my own. I want to avoid burdening others with their struggles because everybody else is busy as well. Everybody else has their own problems. And so I mustn't ask anybody else, and I must look like I've got it all together.
Yes. What was that different with our era? I don't know. I had a mother and a mother-in-law around, and
yeah, I'm not sure. I've got a mother who is very independent and always taught me things like, come on, buck up, think positively, let's move on from that, and can't change that now, and, you know, must look like, and again, she was always very well put together, which I think was a lot from her era as well. If we look like we're well put together, everybody will believe we're well put together and we're in control and everything is perfect.
Yes. So, I think it's come
from a long way back.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I'm just wondering whether, and I don't want to say good, or is that a good or bad thing, really, what I'm thinking. So is it that because we aren't asking for help, we don't show emotions? Is that,
yeah,
does it help us? Does it help us build resilience or not? You know,
there's, I think like a lot of things, Janine, a little bit of both. We kind of want to find a balance there.
Mm.
We want to find a balance. It's okay to ask for help, because otherwise we start to become isolated. We feel isolated. We feel the weight on our shoulders all of the time and we're exhausted. Mm-hmm. And then when we really do need help, we don't know how to ask for it and we won't ask for it.
Mm.
But I think it's also we need to find this balance, and this is where a community and a connection of people really help, right?
Mm.
Because you know you've got a group of people that you can ask and be okay if they respectfully decline because they're overcommitted at this time,
yeah,
but still ask. And I think that's the balance we need to try and be able to find.
And you know, in business, particularly for sole traders, it's and I've worked with employees as well who are scared to ask because then it looks like they don't know what they're doing. But it's why I started the mastermind group for the for women sole traders, is because in that space they're not able to ask for help or don't.
It's a lonely place being a sole trader. It's a lonely, lonely place. Because again, you want to be, you know, we're taught be on social media. Everything looks perfect. It's all perfectly created and branded and all of these things. So outside, everything appears great. Inside, you're like, hang on, I need to brainstorm that idea, but I have nobody to brainstorm it with. So who do I test it with to make sure it's something that my audience actually really wants?
Yes, and I'm work for the last few years, particularly joint venturing with Moana Robinson and Sumiko Ayres. So Moana's a stylist,
yes,
and a personal coach as well, and
yes.
Sumiko is a photographer. And we've been putting together half-day trainings as well as the five-day retreat. And it is so wonderful working with other women, other people to have the ideas, and it's not just your ideas, it's this joint thing. And oh no, that one doesn't oh, that one's better. Let's go with that. And we've got something we're doing at the moment. We just had all these emails this morning saying, oh, no, I like that one better. No, not that one. And to be able to do it without any ego in it and that we all can just contribute. But it just is such a different space. And again, that's why I love my mastermind group that I run, is because of that same reason. People,
it's powerful.
It is. It is
powerful. When we work together and when we can let down the ego or the fear of judgment, okay, they said no, does that mean they don't like me? Or, you know, when we can let go a little bit of that, amazing things happen. We are... It's power in numbers. And to be able to brainstorm something, to be able to, you know, have a safe collection of people where you can run an idea past them or just say, hey, I'm, you know, thinking about doing this. What do you think? You still get to choose. That doesn't take away your power. You're just collecting information. You're doing research. You're investigating. And there's fun in that.
Definitely. And it's the same because, you know, you're working with women in midlife. So we're talking about career or business growth, but it's also the health as well.
Yes, I mean, that's absolutely.
It's going back to being 16-year-old with the body going through all these really lovely changes that you go, oh, where did that 5 kilo come from? I knew it wasn't there last
I
week.
Did not think this was going to happen to me. I have struggled in the past 2 years with the, what do you mean menopause? This is not happening to me. Well, my body had different ideas about that. Apparently you don't get to choose whether you go through menopause or not.
No. And that's a big influencer on how you're feeling, your energy levels, everything that you're doing. So recognizing to give yourself a break.
Absolutely. And this is one of the reasons why I've started to move my program into being not just having one-on-one sessions with myself. I used to help all of my clients just individually. And what I found was this power in a community and the empathy and the, hang on, you are not alone. There are other women. We're experiencing it a little bit differently maybe, but we're experiencing it. So I now run it as a group program as well, because there just is that, oh, is that how it was? You know, I never even realized that that could happen to me. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. And it's just, we learn from each other. That's humans are about that. We learn best from each other. We learn what we like and we learn what we don't like.
And women are very much in a group space.
Definitely.
They're more the building the community as opposed to the
men
hunting the mammoths. You know, it's a very different space for women and men to be in. And that's so important. The group stuff that you do is incredible as well. And we're both on opposite sides of the city in Brisbane, and
we are.
So
it's hard to get us together, but
it certainly is. But at least online here, we can do that.
The power of technology.
It's absolutely vital. Well, as we sort of wrap up here now, Frances, talking about it, out of everything that we've discussed, and I know that that could have gone on for another couple of hours talking about the subjects, I always like to ask for three takeaway points that you definitely want people to remember that they can apply and use in their lives.
Yeah, okay. Well, number one for me, it is that rediscovering yourself is a journey. And that sounds so cliche, but it really is. And it's easier and more enjoyable when you do it with someone. So as we've already said, you know, humans are really craving connection and community. So it makes sense to do this journey as a community. Number two, I would say that joy is not a luxury. Stop treating it like it's a luxury. It is essential. When we are experiencing joy, we are happier. We're just happier people, and we don't then function in a high emotional state. Somebody very smart recently said to me, when your emotions are high, your intelligence is low. So we kind of want to, you know, think about it as a seesaw. Your emotions are up, your intelligence goes down. And if we not having joyous moments, we're functioning in a really high emotional state. And this impacts not just ourselves, but it impacts everybody who's around us. And it tends to impact us in a not so great way.
Yeah. And on that point, and I'll go back to saying no, but more of what you can say yes to. The amount of times when I say to people, because I love shows, concerts, theatre,
yes,
everything, and I'll go, that sounds like a good idea, and I'll go to people, a couple of people I'll go to, are you coming? And they'll go, yes, straight away.
Yes.
And others go, oh, no, I've got to ask my husband, or I've got to, no, I won't. And
That's a flat out no.
Yeah, it feels like, and I just want to metaphorically slap them, you know, just to go put yourself first. Just
yeah.
Make a commitment and have believe you have the capacity to answer for yourself, to do something for yourself.
Absolutely. There are a few things going on for that person when they do that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, it is that they don't believe they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're what I call in the comfort zone keeper spot. So it's the fear of stepping into something unknown. They're scared about what might actually happen, and they'd rather stay home and use the excuse of asking their husband.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is that not allowing them to, one, have those new experiences. Mm. Oh, I've got to go to the theatre. Do I have to drive into the city? Where am I going to park? Am I going to have dinner beforehand? You know, all of that.
Will I wear the right things? Will I say the right things? What happens if I like it?
Yes.
For some people, that's even a fear. What if I like it and I want to do more of it?
Yeah.
My husband maybe doesn't. Does that mean there's something wrong between the two of us?
Yeah.
No, it just means that you found something that you would like to do.
Absolutely. You want to create that joy in your life. So finding those things. And what's the third point?
The third thing is living in alignment with your values. So right back at the beginning, we've talked about really being able to know your values. It doesn't have to be big and dramatic, right? It's not when you think of the word bold, it doesn't have to be big, loud, and dramatic. You don't have to throw everything out. So if perhaps you go to the theater and you find out you like it, it doesn't now mean that you've got to separate from your husband because he doesn't like it.
Mm.
It just means that you found something that you might like. And now it's about some little tweaks that can bring you closer to that life that you're more aligned to. So going to the theatre maybe once or twice a year, doing something that you do like with your husband that he also likes. You know, it's just about being aligned. And if it's even in business or in a career, you need to know your values so that part of your life is aligned as well. You want every part of your life to have some sort of alignment, which then rolls into the joy.
And it brings a joy, naturally, when you're doing things that,
really does.
That are important to you, that you really enjoy.
It brings it intentionally as well, Janine. And it also, this all sounds like a lot of work. I know that it sounds like a lot of work, but when you start knowing your values and saying more yes to the things that you like, you will automatically say no to the things you don't. And this all becomes very unconscious. It becomes a habit. It becomes you, the real authentic you. And there's no work then. You're just you.
No, that's important. I mean, one of my highest values is just new experiences. It just experiencing new experiences. So for me, the getting uncomfortable part of it is just what I have to do the new experiences. But even for my grandchildren, when I'm buying their birthday presents, I buy an experience.
Yes.
I don't buy, well, I do buy something else. I bought, so my granddaughter was 9 the other day, and I bought her a punnet of strawberries because that's her favorite fruit. Mm-hmm. And we're going horse riding. And my grandson, for his birthday last year, I bought him a whole rock melon. They get just as excited about the fruit
I
part.
love this. That's
And
fantastic.
we bought a jet boat ride around the Broadwater also. And when they turn 10, they go, I take them somewhere. So I took him to Sydney last year, no, December 3rd, 23. Mm-hmm. And we spent 4 days in Sydney doing all the things.
These are the memories that those children will have forever.
Mm.
And they'll always, when they see rock melon or they see strawberries, they're always going to think of you. Like, isn't it lovely? It's just lovely to know that you've got that sort of impact, and you're not changing who you are. They're not having to change who they are. It's perfect. That's beautiful. That's contentment. That to me sounds contentment.
And a lot of the things is, well, someone's got to go with them, you know? So.
Yeah.
It's a big win-win.
Yeah. Well, my highest value is freedom. And for me, it's freedom to try things.
Yes.
So, and that also means that sometimes I have to, usually I have to be uncomfortable to do the thing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freedom is right up there for me, and it's all part of it, as well as, yes, don't put baby in the corner, that's for sure.
I understand that one.
Or lock them up for a couple of months. That doesn't work either. look, I've loved our conversation, Frances. How can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more about what you do and the groups that you run?
Yeah, for sure. So they can find me and stalk me and follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and on YouTube. So you can find all of those places. And there's also my website where you can get in touch with me and we can talk about my 90-day midlife awakening program. So it's a great program where we really, that's the group program, where you do get some one-on-one time, but we really get to uncover those values. It's really about the discovery and the clarity about who you are in this time of your life and what do you want.
That's so important.
Work towards getting it.
Oh, that's important. What's the name of the group that you run?
The Facebook group that I run is called Women Redefining Midlife.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm sure people will be able to find it. Plus, all the information will be in the show notes anyway. So perfect. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your time with us today, Frances.
It's been a great chat. Thank you.
Most welcome, loved it. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Remember to visit JeaneVosper.com, book in a strategy call, and we can have a chat. And as I say every time, if I know that I'm not the best person for you, I have got hundreds of amazing women that I can recommend that might be able to help you achieve the goals and successes that you want in your life and in your business. Have a fantastic day, week, month. We will be back in 3 weeks again. And enjoy and find joy in life. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Jeanine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.